So it's the day of Pentecost. This is the day when, as I just said to the children, the believers were all gathered together in an upper room in Jerusalem. It was 50 days after the resurrection. And Jesus had been with them for 40 of those 50 days until he ascended into heaven. 50 days. That's what Pentecost means. 50 days after Passover. It was a festival, a Jewish festival, when they remembered the giving of the law to Moses, the Ten Commandments, and the establishment of a covenant between Israel and God. A covenant is an agreement, a contract, a way of being with one another, a way of living. And people from all over the known world, Jewish people, came to Jerusalem to celebrate this festival of the giving of the law, the making of the covenant, which was really at the heart of their identity and self-understanding of a people. And we heard all those names of all those places, some of them a little bit difficult to pronounce now. They even had proselytes among them. Proselytes are converts to Judaism. But essentially, they were all Jews. It was a Jewish religion. It was, in a sense, a tribal religion. God was their God, not the God of the nations in their understanding. And yet today, on the 50th day after Passover, also the 50th day after the resurrection, they came together to remember the establishment of the giving of the covenant. I'm actually going to turn my microphone off because I can hear it's cutting in and out. It's distracting me and it'll probably distract you. And so now, they gather together and the Spirit comes because now a new covenant has been established. This is the culmination of all that Jesus came to do. This is why he came. This is what he was about. He came, he lived, he taught, he healed, he cast out demons. He showed those who followed him what God was like. He was the Son of the Father. And like Father, like Son. Whatever the Father does, the Son does likewise. He says in chapter 5 of John's Gospel, there's a family resemblance. You see the Son, and you see the Father. Just as he said to Philip in the Gospel that Vincent read to us so well. Thank you for that, Vincent. Whoever has seen me, he said, has seen the Father. So they gather together. And there's a mighty wind, like we heard at the beginning of this service. But it says a violent wind, a powerful wind. Think of a wind like a tornado touching down, but without the destruction, just the sound and the sense of that power that is there. And the writer is trying to describe what it was, and they're struggling for images. And he said, it's like the believers were glowing, like they had tongues of fire on their heads. They were on fire. And they began to proclaim the mighty works of God in the languages of people who come to Jerusalem from all over the known world. How is it we can hear what they're saying? How is it we can understand? Have they been drinking? No, it's only 9 o'clock in the morning. Pubs aren't open yet. It does make me wonder. A new covenant, a new relationship. And for us, as Christians now, this is the culmination of the Christian year. This is the peak of the Christian year, where we've reached the heights. We're on top of a mountain with Moses, as it were, when he received the law. And that's how the Christian year goes. We begin in Advent, looking forward to the one who is to come, the one who is always to come into the world, looking forward to the birth of the Christ, looking forward to the incarnation that we celebrate at Christmas. God with us. God has come to be one of us. And then after Christmas we have Epiphany. And Epiphany is all about growing into that understanding of who Jesus is and was and what he came to do. It's about grasping something of what the incarnation is. Epiphany means revelation or manifestation, making clear. I'm having an epiphany. It's all become clear. And then, after the epiphany, which ends now with the vision of transfiguration on the mountain, where the disciples really did come to see Jesus for who he really was, the Son of the Father. Then we enter Lent, and we begin the journey towards Jerusalem and the crucifixion, the death of Jesus, the end of his life on earth. But it doesn't end there. We have the resurrection. He lives again. A new beginning, another new beginning, always a new beginning. And for 40 days he was with the disciples and went about among them and appeared to them at different times, at different places, perhaps when they were least expecting it. Sometimes they didn't quite recognize him, and they wondered, is it really the Lord? They didn't ask him, because they knew it was the Lord. And then he ascends, he's gone. And yet, he promised them that when he went, he would send another, well, the version we heard this morning says advocate. That's only one aspect of what Greek word paraclete means. Literally one who comes alongside. One who advocates and who counsels, one who comforts, encourages, helps, inspires. And remember, inspire is really about inspiriting, having the spirit in you. You are inspired. Two words are closely linked. Jesus is going to go, he's no longer going to be with them, but the Spirit will come, and the Spirit will lead them into all truth. This is the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, because the world, without the enlightenment of the Spirit, cannot even see the truth, and does not know the truth. This is if it's sitting around in the dark. Jesus promises the Spirit of truth will come and lead them into all the truth. And so we arrive at the day of Pentecost. And the believers are gathered together and the Spirit comes. And they begin to proclaim the good news, the mighty works of God in languages of the known world. And the symbolism is clear as day for anyone who has eyes to see. But this is the breaking out of faith from being a tribal religion, our God, not your God, into being a universal religion, the God for everyone. The love of God is for all. This is the bringing together, the beginning of the bringing together of all people. Not just the believers, not just those of faith, but the whole world. It's the beginning of the conversion of the world, the coming to be one, as Jesus prayed, and we heard last week. I pray not only for these disciples, but also for those who will believe in me through their word. And each of us has come here because we've heard the word from someone else, who heard it from someone else, who heard it from someone else, who eventually, if you trace it all the way back, heard it from the disciples. It's an unbroken line. This is the beginning of the world becoming one, as he and the Father are one. So, where are we today? How are we with this now? With the world coming together? And yet it seems that when we see the news, when I see the news on the internet or on the TV, there seems to be as much division as ever. Us against them. Us and not us. There seems to be violence. There seems to be separation. Children from their parents. There is people fleeing from oppression and injustice. There seems to be all sorts of corruption. There seems to be a great uncertainty of what truth is. The world still doesn't know
the Spirit of truth. Cannot even see it, still stumbling around in the dark. Where are we with this? Well, I came across something, of course, on the internet. Nobody seems to come from these days. And it's very recent, and it really struck me as being a bit of an antidote to this perception, which, you know, is a little bit negative, a little bit pessimistic, to say the least. You know, when one looks around at the world and one is tempted to despair. It comes from Barack Obama, who was speaking in Canada just over a week ago at the Canadian Tire Centre in Ottawa. And he says that when he left the White House, he says, "I left the office cautiously optimistic. I believe the long-term trajectory of humanity is in a positive direction," he said. "But you get dark ages before Renaissance. You get World War II and 60 million dead before there's a post-World War II order that stabilizes societies. And just this past week, of course, we've been thinking of World War II and of the sacrifices that many young men, 18, 19, 20, were asked to bring about the liberation, the setting free, the release from the tyranny of Nazi Germany and all the other evils that they were fighting against. You get World War II and 60 million dead on all sides, of course. That's the population of the UK now, the whole population. Twice, nearly twice, the population of Canada. The world, he argued, listen to this, the world, he argued, has never been healthier, wealthier, better educated, more tolerant, and less violent than right now. Never been more healthier, wealthier, better educated, more tolerant, and less violent than right now. And yet, it's easy to get sucked in and consumed by the negativity. It's easy to focus on the negative and to not realize that that's only part of the story. He continues, but it's an age of political and social disruption, where technology is gorging us with information. And no one, listen to this, can agree on what constitutes the truth. So a coherent debate can ensue. We're back to that not knowing. What is the truth? We don't know the spirit of truth that Jesus promised. We're overloaded with information, but we can't sort it and discern what is the true story. He continues, it's indisputable that things have gotten better. But in that march of progress, we had the Holocaust, and we had Jim Crow, and we had the killing fields. So we cannot be complacent. I think sometimes when we want an antidote to despair, it's easy to flip to the other side, potentially, which is complacency. To think, oh well, the world has never been healthier, wealthier, better educated, more tolerant and less violent than it is now. So what's the problem? No, we're not done yet. It's true what he's saying, I think, if we were to look at it objectively. that even though there is still violence and oppression and injustice, in terms of the numbers of people involved, and certainly proportionally, when you think of 60 million dead in the Second World War, that thank God we're not seeing that kind of scale of death and destruction. But it's not a time to be complacent. He said, an ancient story that has appeared time and again throughout history is back, and it's very primal. This is the ancient story of division and separation, us and them. As I like to remind us when we talk about division, another word that means division is diabolo, diabolo, from which we get the word diabolic. So at the heart of whatever we think of diabolic or devilish or satanic is this idea of separation. And if you think about it, the separation, the dividing of one off from another, is the opposite of Jesus' prayer that we may be one, as he and the Father are one. This ancient story, Obama said, focuses on us and not us. It's trial. It's a zero-sum contest between people. And a strong man appears who is going to protect all of us from them. That kind of politics, he said, has gotten traction. That story has got a lot of traction around the world. It's not unique to any particular country. It's not just talking about the US. We see it here in Canada as well. We certainly see it in the UK, a country tragically and sadly divided at this time. At this time when we remember what happened at D-Day and in the months after that. Then came Obama's prescription. That, I think, has to be combated with better stories. Because I think there's a better story to be told about human progress. It's inclusive, and it's hopeful, and it is generous, and it is kind, and it is based on science and facts and not fear. A story of inclusion and tolerance. And yet, you all saw, I'm sure, on the news, that horrible incident on the London bus this week in the early hours of the morning, where two women, a couple, were taunted by a bunch of teenagers who apparently they have now arrested, aged between 15 and 18. Mm-hmm. Just kids. Similar age to those kids who we sent off to the Normandy beaches. And they were set upon. They were taunted, they were beaten up. You've probably seen the pictures, the bruises, the black eyes, broken nose. Horrendous. Absolutely horrendous. And yet, the good point within all this, there is one, is that we're shocked by it. We're horrified by it. And if you think about it, maybe 20 years ago, maybe even less than 20 years ago, certainly 30 years ago, or 50 years ago, or 75 years ago, those two women would not even have been able to be on the bus openly as a couple anyway. So the fact that they were there, paradoxically, does point to what Obama is saying as true, that the world is more tolerant, is more inclusive, but we're not there yet. No, there's still a risk. There's still violence. We have the capacity, he says, for inclusion and for tolerance, to be kind, generous. But I think, he says, we get complacent. And so maybe what the Spirit is saying to the church today,
through this familiar story of the day of the Pentecost. Don't be complacent. Don't give up. And don't despair. But don't be complacent. And not when he was speaking in Canada on May 31st at the Canadian Tire Centre, but at another time, Obama did define what he meant by hope, which is kind of the opposite of despair. We don't want to be complacent, and we don't want to despair. The antidote is hope. And he says hope is not blind optimism. It's not ignoring the enormity of the task ahead or the roadblocks that stand in our path. It's not sitting on the sidelines or shirking from a fight. Hope is the thing inside us that insists, despite all evidence to the contrary, that something better awaits us. If we have the courage to reach out for it, to work for it, and fight for it. Hope is the thing inside us. And today we're thinking of God's Spirit entering into those first believers in the gospel. We're thinking of the Spirit entering into us. It's a Spirit of truth to help us see the truth, to discern the light from the darkness, the good from the bad, the evil from what is right. Something better awaits us. And then this is a huge if here. If we have the courage, the heart, to reach for it, work for it, and fight for it. And then he says something very interesting, what I think is very powerful. He says, hope is the belief that destiny will not be written for us, but by us. Hope is the belief that destiny will not be written for us, but by us. By the men and women who are not content to settle for the world as it is, even with all the progress, who have the courage to remake the world as it should be. And that, I believe, for today, is what this day of Pentecost